Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Good, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I've been trying to jog in the morning, but some mornings it's like 50 degrees, and then other mornings it's 80 degrees. So I've been trying to watch the Weather Channel so I know what to wear when I get up in the morning and go jogging or walking. I saw a show that was being promoted on the Weather Channel called Storm of Suspicion. True crime show, weather angle to this. Pretty cool, right?
Yeah, you know, it just shows how big this genre is getting if even the Weather Channel is getting into the true crime business. This show is going to be much like the other shows and documentaries that already exist out there. But the interesting part is every case is a case that was impacted by weather.
They have a Dr. Elizabeth Austin, who's a forensic meteorologist. I didn't even know that existed.
I didn't either, but it totally makes sense. You know, we covered cases where there were insect experts that had to come and, you know, check out the grill of a car or something, or check out a body and check the larvae that were on the body just so they could pinpoint the time of death. And so here it's someone who can interpret evidence on how it impacts the case. So it's a different spin. And I think for anybody that's into true crime, it's definitely something that's unlike anything else we've seen so far.
And it comes on this Sunday, October 7th, 8 Eastern, 7 Central. As you're listening to this, you should tune in.
Yeah, it premieres on the Weather Channel, October 7th at 8 Eastern, 7 Central, Storm of Suspicion. Also, for anyone that doesn't know, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheGenerationYPodcast. And you can find us on Twitter at GenYPod. And you can find us on Instagram, one of my personal favorites, at Generation Y Podcast. Follow us.
Canada, the Great White North, a utopia of manners, healthcare, and big-hearted people saying, hey. Sadly, that place doesn't exist. I'm Jordan, and on my show Nighttime, I uncover a version of Canada that is far darker than the one used in advertising to sell coffee, beer, and cars. The Canada I discuss on Nighttime is a twisted maze of crime, missing persons cases, unexplained events, and stories that prove Canada is not what they want you to think. If you want to join me, subscribe to the Nighttime Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else.
Tonight's case is something that I watched the Werner Herzog documentary long, long time ago about this, Into the Abyss.
I did too, and I remember it being sort of a documentary discussing the death penalty.
Yeah, I mean, it does follow a crime that occurred, and the victims and the perpetrators, anyone that might say the documentary is biased, I would say that the documentary wasn't trying to solve a crime. It was trying to give commentary on the death penalty and all the people that it impacts. So it's more about storytelling about that and less about the investigation, you know?
The one thing I know for sure is that Werner Herzog is an excellent documentarian. So you can put on any one of his documentaries at random. If nothing else, you'll realize how good he is at what he does.
One of my favorite things that he does, and he does it in every single one of his movies, whatever it is he leaves the camera rolling just a little too long. Like after the person's done talking, they'll either say something else that's totally unrelated, or they'll just kind of look off into the distance while he's filming them. And it's almost this awkward moment. And it's just a very Herzog thing to do.
It's almost like you become a voyeur for a few seconds.
Yeah. So what case are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Normally, I just give you the name of the episode, the title of the episode. But this time, I'm still trying to work out what that is. I know on paper, I've been writing it down as the Stotler murders. And that's because a woman by the name of Sandra Stotler and her son, Adam Stotler, as well as a friend of his named Jeremy, all were murdered. And they were murdered by two friends. One of them is Michael James Perry, and the other one is Jason Burkett. The reason why these three people were murdered might surprise you.
Yeah, it's a really petty reason. And let's just jump into it because you just have to hear it for yourself. So this was October 24th, 2001, Montgomery County, Texas. Sandra Stotler is at home. It's a gated community. It's a very nice home, very nice area. She's baking cookies. It's around 7 p.m. at night.
And she lives at this home with her adopted step-grandson, James Adam Stotler. She had adopted him at 6 months of age and raised him as her own son. She was a nurse at Conroe Regional Hospital. Sandra was 50. Adam was 17.
So she hears a knock at the door. She goes out to answer it, and there's these two boys, two young men, asking if her son is home. And she says, no, he's at the skate park, which, hey, why wouldn't he be at a skate park? That's where you should be, staying out of trouble. So the two guys say, all right, no problem. We were just looking for him. And they leave, but they come back just minutes later.
Yeah, they had been driving a pickup truck, which belonged to one of the boys' girlfriend.
Now, these two guys, they were more or less looking to steal a car. And they knew that Adam's family had a red Camaro, really nice Camaro. So they thought, well, we'll go over there, we'll try to spend the night, and then we'll take their car in the middle of the night, or some half-baked plan like that.
That's why they were hoping her son was home. Then they could, you know, say, hey, can we stay the night or something like that? And then during the night, they could sneak off with the car. Which isn't real bright, because wouldn't they figure out who stole the car?
It's a half-baked plan, and they're not real that sharp. As they're leaving, they think, well, only his mom's home. I guess that's less people we have to deal with. Let's go back and take that car. And they have a shotgun on them. Jason goes to the front door and knocks to get Sandra to come answer it. Jason's claiming that their truck is broken down and they need to call someone. Meanwhile, the garage door is open and Perry goes through the garage and then knocks on a door from the garage into the house to, I guess, confuse her or get her to come back around to answer that door.
Yeah, I think confusion is part of the game here. Also, they will be on either side of her at that point. And of course, Jason is at the front door and he's asking to use a phone. So she probably is confused because it's not like he's threatening her, but now she's getting knocks at two different doors.
It's at this point, she's shot. She falls to the ground, but she's not dead yet. So she starts to get up, starts to try to get away. So they finish her off. At this point, they have to deal with the body. So they go upstairs, strip some of the bedding off the bed in the master bedroom, and wrap her up in that. They put her in the back of the pickup, and they leave. Now, it is a gated community, but the gates are open during the day. But after dusk, and this is around 7 p.m., they're going to be closing those gates soon. So they leave with her body. They drive out to a place called Crater Lake. I'm not sure if it's called Crater Lake because a meteorite hit the earth and this is what caused it, but it's called Crater Lake. And they back the truck up and dump her body into the lake. Now, they go back to the gated community because they want to get these cars. But the gates are now closed. They don't know the code to get in. So they just hang out, parked outside, waiting for their friend. And again, this is somebody they know who they've just murdered the guy's mother. They wait for him to come home because they know that he was at the skate park and he's going to be home soon.
Yeah, Sandra had already told them about what time he would be home, and so they just had to wait. They have to come up with a plan, though. They can't just say, hey, we're here to hang out with you. They want to say something so that he's involved, so that they can get him to help them. Or really what it is they want him to be vulnerable.
And they know that if he comes home and he sees his house in somewhat disarray and blood everywhere, he's going to know something's up. So he gets there with his friend and they say, hey man, we were out hunting and one of our friends got shot. So we need your help. Could you maybe take us out into the woods and help us carry him back?
And when Adam showed up, he was driving the Isuzu Rodeo, which is the other vehicle that his family owned.
They have Adam Stotler and Jeremy Richardson, and they're able to coax them out so they can isolate them.
Yeah, I think what they really want is they want the keys. And so since they weren't able to find the Camaro key, maybe that key is on Adam's person. And the fact that he's driving the Isuzu means he's got that key as well. So likely he's got both the keys they need. So they can't let him go home. They want him to go to the woods because they can take care of him and get the keys from him there.
But now they have two people to deal with. So they lead them out into the woods. They park and the two of them get out. Burkett approaches them with a shotgun. He asks them, did they hear any gunshots? He was firing his shotgun to show where they're located, like to kind of signal them. He told them to follow him out to where they were. Perry said he saw Burkett shoot at him, and he covered his eyes when he heard another shot. He uncovered his eyes and saw Burkett shoot at him a third time. After they shoot at him, they end up shooting his friend, killing both of them. Perry then walked over to his body and pulled his car keys out. Then they went back over to where Burkett's girlfriend was waiting on them. And once she figured out what had happened, she became upset and drove home herself. But now they had Adam's wallet and keys to the Camaro. The boys went home, say they smoked cigarettes, cleaned off, and ended up going to a club that night, to a drinking establishment. So to summarize this, they went to the home. The kids weren't home. They started to leave. They came back and decided to kill the mother so they could get the cars. But then they couldn't find the keys. So then they waited for Adam and his friend to come home to kill them for the keys of this car. So three people have died now for this red Camaro.
Just a couple of days later, this is on Friday, October 26th, the police pulled over a red Camaro on Texas 105 after a high-speed chase. The car is wrecked, and the driver flees on foot. But they catch up to him, and they take his wallet out, and it has an ID showing Adam Stotler. So they arrest Adam Stotler.
And the car is registered to the Stotler family, so sort of makes sense. But if you know what Adam Stotler looks like and who the person they arrested looks like, they're not even close.
The really crazy part here is that they arrest Adam Stotler, only it's Michael James Perry. And before they really catch wind of what's going on, well, Perry makes bail. And so they do run the fingerprint analysis, which is good. You know, they're actually investigating this to figure out what happened. And it comes back that Perry is a fugitive. So now it's like, uh-oh, we've got warrants on this guy. We need to go after him.
And it's even said that the arresting officer either knew it wasn't Adam or even knew that it might have been Perry. But it's like, not my job. I'll let the booking officer do his thing. I don't even understand how this could have gone so badly, but they let him out because he makes bail before the fingerprints come back.
Yeah, I mean, how do you look at that? Do you look at it as they don't care? Or is this a sign that something else is happening?
Yeah.
Well, of course, because of the Camaro being found, the police then say, well, we need to contact the owner, which is Sandra Stotler. And they actually call her home and say, can you please call us back? You know, call the police. We have your car.
They call her place of employment, but she hasn't shown up to work.
Well, eventually Sandra Stotler is located, but she's not located by the police. She's located by two fishermen at Crater Lake.
And now that they have a body that they've identified as her, they now go back to the house and find the scene of the crime. And they find blood, they find things in disarray. Pretty obvious that somebody's been murdered and removed from the home.
October 30th, this is where things really heat up, because in a Isuzu Rodeo, which is reported as stolen, I guess, is spotted by a Montgomery County Sheriff's Corporal. It actually strikes the corporal as it's trying to get away, and the officer fires at the vehicle, taking out a rear tire. And so this rodeo crashes. The occupants, Michael James Perry and Jason Burkett,
and a third random guy,
take off. And one of them has a shotgun.
They run into the side of a building. They jump out. They're running through the building, still being shot at. And there's a large window that they need to jump out of. So they shoot through the window to exit this building, which, yeah, the cops just think they're being shot at this point. And even if you're not shooting at the cops and you're discharging a firearm while they're shooting at you, yeah, they're going to try to kill you even more now. So, they get out of the building.
They go over a fence. They're going through an apartment complex area. They're arrested. Michael James Perry had a deep cut on his arm from, they assume, the car crash. He went to a hospital, and it's there that he's questioned. And apparently, Michael James Perry makes a confession.
Yeah, he's questioned in the ambulance, of all places, and he's talking to EMTs, and he's talking to investigators and whatnot, and he tells the entire story, which is very fresh. I mean, this is right after they've been apprehended. So I wouldn't say a lot of time to feed somebody information. This is very on the fly. Meanwhile, his friend Jason has been shot multiple times by the police, and he's going to the hospital also. But And the third guy, well, he's just collateral damage at this point.
They don't record his confession, though, do they?
No, no.
His confession, though, is such. Last week, the week of October 22 through 26, my friend Jason Burkett and I decided we needed to get a vehicle or two vehicles. We both know a younger white male, known to us as Adam Stotler, whose parents have a lot of money. They also have a newer Camaro and Isuzu Rodeo. On Wednesday, 10/24/01, Jason and I made a plan that we were going to ask to spend the night with Adam at his house, and we were going to take the Camaro in the middle of the night while Adam and his mom were sleeping. We went to Adam's house at about 7 p.m. Wednesday, 10/24/01. Jason was driving his girlfriend, Kristen Rennell's blue Chevy truck. I was riding in the passenger seat. We had a 12-gauge shotgun with us. Jason and I got to Adam's house, and his mom told us that Adam wasn't home, that he was at the skate park and would be home around 9 p.m. Jason and I left the truck. Before we got out of the subdivision, Jason said that it would be easier to get the car with only one person home. I have to interrupt this for a moment because you think it would be easier to get the vehicle when everyone was asleep, not when one person was home. But anyway, Jason and I then made a plan that Jason would knock on the front door and I would sneak in the back door through the garage with the shotgun. We went to Adam's house on foot and left Kristen's truck down the road. I walked around to the side of the house through the garage, and Jason knocked on the front door and asked to use the phone. When I heard Jason talking on the phone, I went into the house through the back door in the garage. Once in the house, I hid in the laundry room between the kitchen and the garage. I then knocked on the back door, and when Adam's mom came to the back door, I shot her one time in the side near her back with the shotgun. She fell to the floor, and I dropped the shotgun. She then moved or tried to get up or something, and I grabbed the shotgun and shot her one more time. She fell to the floor in front of the laundry room and garage back door. Jason freaked out and ran to the front door and opened the door. We calmed down a little and grabbed the blankets and sheet off the bed in the bedroom near the kitchen and put the blankets and sheet near her because we did not want to look at her. Jason ran and got Kristen's truck and brought it back to Adam's house. Jason backed the truck into the garage, and we dragged Adam's mom's body and the blankets out into the garage where we loaded her into the back of the truck with the blankets and sheet. I could not find the keys to the Camaro, and I remembered that the inspection sticker was expired and Adam's mom never drove it.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/genY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/genY. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/genY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/genY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/genY.
Anyway, I guess what I'm getting at with the confession here is it's very long, it's very detailed, and I don't know what you can take from this, but at least when I'm reading it, this is not just a confession. You know, sometimes we get a confession where some guy says, yeah, I killed her. No, this is every single detail, even stuff you don't really need to know. I mean, this is a very complete confession, in my opinion.
He says where he shot her and how many times, how he did it. There's way more detail here than we would really ever wish to have. So I'm thinking this is a pretty good confession. And not only is this a good confession that the police got, but the days in between when they stole the vehicles and they were apprehended, every single person they hung out with or talked to, they bragged about killing people and getting these cars. They went on to hang out at this one bar where they concocted some idiotic story about how they bought a lottery ticket and won $4,000 and bought this car. And they were taking people out on joyrides with this car. It's a small town. Everyone knows each other here. They're all friends. And they're taking people out on joyrides in a car that they stole from somebody that they just murdered. Some of these people kind of recognize the car of and who it belongs to. So it's not only is it these confessions that they made to the police, but everyone they were around in the last few days knows what these guys were doing. It's not rocket science.
And of special note, toward the end of the confession, they talk about the shotgun that was used to murder these people. And this is the part of the confession. The shotgun we used came from a burglary that Jason and I did on Avenue E by the Salvation Army. Jason and I both know the homeowner, and he drives a green Ford Ranger. We took a Glock 40 and a 12-gauge Defender out of the house. The 12-gauge Defender is the shotgun we used to kill Adam's mom, Adam Stotler, and Jeremy. I also took Adam's wallet out of his Isuzu with his driver's license. I mean, it's this is pretty much, this is it. This is everything a detective would want to hear. There's not even a question here, is there?
I would say no. Then you add in when they find the bodies of the two boys, Adam and his friend, they find a cigarette butt under the body that has Perry's DNA on it. So, yeah. I don't know how anyone could think anyone else committed these murders. I think it's pretty self-explanatory between the material evidence, circumstantial evidence, the confessions, the eyewitness testimony to other people that they spoke to. I don't know how there's any question anyone else committed these murders.
So it seems like an open and shut case. They have physical evidence. They have confessions. But there's still a trial here. And what's really interesting is that, sure, we know who committed the murders, but there's a player that is sort of a question in this whole case, which is Kristen Willis. This is Jason Burkett's girlfriend. She gets complete immunity for testimony. And the crazy thing about that is that she's the only one that had blood spatter on her.
She's the only one that they could really tie. I mean, they could tie all of them back, but on her clothing, she had blood. So we know she was there. Now, the cigarette butt under the body, we know Perry was at least there on that during that killing. And he has all the details from Sandra's murder. So it's really hard to split these people up.
So there are a lot of deals being handed out. But what really stood out to me again is Kristen Willis. She had blood spatter on her, on the shirt, but the shirt and the report of the findings of the blood that was analyzed, which turned out to be Sandra Stotler's, the shirt and that report were destroyed. It seems really, really strange. Is that because they're saying, well, we're not going to prosecute her, so we don't need this evidence? I mean, wouldn't you hold on to it just because you want to make sure she goes through with it? It seems like they're all just too much in a hurry to get rid of this good physical evidence they have in this case.
They held on to the red Camaro forever. It was parked in a lot for so long that a tree actually grew up through it. So I don't understand why they would feel the need to get rid of this evidence. And I actually don't understand why they didn't end up giving the car back to the family. they felt the need to have it for further testing or research. But then when it's left out there for so long that a tree grows through it, that kind of destroys any evidence.
The weird thing is, and maybe it's not weird, maybe this is, you know, self-explanatory, but Kristen Willis's stepfather was a Montgomery County deputy named Lloyd Reynolds.
So a little bit of pull when you know somebody.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know how else you look at it, but we don't know for certain. It just seems a little too convenient.
She has family members that are involved with law enforcement. Meanwhile, these two guys are, for lack of a better term, they're just trash. And they've been dealt a really bad deck in life, and they haven't really amounted to much. They're not going to have any pull in the system.
The charges against the young men were Michael James Perry, charged with Sandra Stotler's murder, and Jason Burkett was charged with all three murders. Because of the amount of evidence, because of the number of people willing to give testimony, the defense really didn't have much of a case. Is there anything that you have to say about this, Justin, and anything about how the defense tried to protect these young men in court?
The defense attorneys do what defense attorneys do, and they fight for their clients, but they went kind of low on this one, I think. The attorney, Steve Jackson, tried to convince the jury that Adam Stotler and Richardson had hired Perry to kill his mother so that they would receive insurance money. Okay? Put that in perspective. Adam wanted Perry to kill his mom for insurance. So let's say this is true. Perry goes and kills Sandy. But then why would Perry kill Adam and his friend? There's not going to be any insurance payout then. I mean, I guess this is the defense throwing anything out there, but it doesn't make any bit of sense.
Yeah, I understand how you have to do what you have to do to protect your clients. But in this case, that is low. I mean, you're basically taking victims and tarnishing their names.
Well, the victims are dead, so they can say they did whatever they want because they're not there to defend themselves. But the Stotler family, I'm sure, doesn't appreciate the fact that their brother, their son, their family member is the one being blamed for this murder.
Once you have this much evidence against you, obviously, odds are you're not going to do well in court. Michael James Perry received a death sentence by lethal injection.
Don't mess with Texas.
He definitely tried to say that his confession was coerced by the police. There's that whole question of how long was that ambulance ride? It's a 10-mile journey to the hospital, and yet they said it took 53 minutes.
Which, if this was LA or New York, sure, that makes sense, but this is out in the middle of nowhere, Texas. It doesn't take an hour to drive 10 miles.
Yeah, middle of nowhere. Burkett was charged with all three murders, as I had said before. He received a life sentence, and they said that it was his father who had tried to appeal to the court during the sentencing phase, who may have spared his life. Did you take that in, Justin? I mean, I really felt like the father was the reason he didn't get a death penalty here.
They pulled his father out of prison because his father was serving time for a murder. And he came in and explained what it's like in prison, explained his life, the upbringing, and his own failures as a father, and that his son's actions weren't all of his own, and that he was the one that caused a lot of this nightmare, and to please spare his son's life. So the jury was literally crying during his testimony.
Yeah, I think they felt for this guy. You know, he's a criminal, but he literally came out, and this is probably the greatest moment of his parenting career, if you could call it that. But he's saying, blame me. I'm the reason that he failed. I'm the reason he did this. It's all my fault. And wow, how can you not feel a little bit of something there?
Perry didn't have anyone to do that for him during sentencing. You know, even if you want to make the argument that he didn't commit the murder, he was present for the robbery. So was Jason's girlfriend. So under the felony murder doctrine, where if you murder somebody in the commission of a felony, you get the wrath of the law either way.
It seems at least most people see there's enough evidence that Michael James Perry was involved in all of the murders.
I'm surprised they only charged him with one. So it's ironic that we have Perry, who's only charged with one murder, gets the death penalty. And then we have Jason Burkett, charged with three murders, doesn't get the death penalty.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, because you would think, you know, if you relate the cases to one another, you have one that just, there's one murder. I know that's bad, but then the other guy has three murders pinned on him. You would think that this would have come out exactly the opposite way. But again, this is Jason Burkett, who, you know, his father finally came through for him and spared his life.
And then you have the girlfriend, Willis, who gets nada, nothing. So three murders. We have a death penalty. We have a life sentence. And we have somebody that walks.
Okay, so Kristen walks, but what are the thoughts here? I mean, was she involved more than people let on? Or did the authorities know this, but either because of her connection to law enforcement or because she had good information, they decided to spare her? What do you think about this?
I think that prosecutors can do whatever they want. And that's why we have such a discrepancy here. I think that she was involved in all of them because, one, we have the blood on her shirt, which was Sandy's blood. So we know she was at the house. We told the story without her at the house, but it's pretty obvious she was. It's possible she helped drag Sandra's body because of the drag marks that they found and blood. It appears as if one person was stronger than the other. So her body, Sandy's body, was lifted up on one end, but then dragging on the other. So does this mean that Kristen was helping with the disposal of the body?
You wonder, because I know the shirt was destroyed eventually, but when the shirt was analyzed, it was said that it was from backspatter, which means the original idea that it was just the two young guys may not be right. But given the fact that she got complete immunity and she wasn't charged, and the only evidence tying her to these crimes really was destroyed, then it's almost like we can think whatever we want, but this is how it went down. She was given protections. If she was involved, as looks like she probably was, then she was able to get away with it.
And then we have the second incident, the second scenario of murders, where she's driven the car and that she's upset after it happens and she drives home. She's at both of the crime scenes.
So, of course, anytime you have convictions and sentencing like this, there are appeals.
Especially for a death penalty. Yeah.
Let's start with one of the problems that Michael James Perry has is he claims that his confession was coerced. And he tries to say that he was highly intoxicated when he gave his confession. So that almost sounds odd because, as we had already said, and I read some of it, his confession is very complete. You know, for someone who's apparently highly intoxicated, he's really sharp with the details.
And he says that he wasn't around during the murders. He says that his friend, Jason, just came and picked him up. He thought the car was clean, like not stolen, and he was at the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people. Yet we have eyewitness testimony that says he was bragging about this before he was apprehended, and eyewitness testimony showing them giving joyrides in the car. So I don't understand his appeal saying, I wasn't there. Jason just picked me up. That doesn't add up at all.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/GenY. That's storyworth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
This isn't odd at all. I mean, law enforcement will assess you when they talk with you. They watch your behavior. And everything that Perry did was suspicious. And I know you say, oh, well, suspicious doesn't mean anything. I think in this case, it does. I mean, Perry is the one who gave this detailed confession. And, you know, some people try to say, oh, well, it was too detailed. Really? I mean, he's giving which way he turned and this and that. Okay, so if you didn't do it, why are you just handing out all these details? And then why is he fleeing when he apparently has nothing to do with this?
Well, he was scared because they were getting shot at by police, Aaron, in a stolen vehicle of people that were murdered.
And he was bragging about killing people.
Anyone that gets behind Perry as far as an innocence group, I hate to say it, but this is the wrong person to get behind. You have to put on total blinders and disregard reality in order to think that this guy had nothing to do with this.
I think sometimes people get behind those convicted because they have problems with the case. I see problems with this case, and it's not, they're not the kind of problems where I say we have to start over. I don't think that way, but there are definitely problems with the case. We already mentioned, you know, Burkett got a life sentence for 3 murders, and Michael James Perry gets the death penalty for 1.
And Perry gets the death penalty for 1, but his DNA is found at the scene of the other. It's like, what? Like, come on.
The details are a bit odd. It's also odd that Kristen Willis, who appears to be much more involved than the authorities would have you believe, it just seems like this case isn't very fair in a way. And I'm not saying it's not fair, we have to let these people out. I'm saying when we look at what people were charged with, what they weren't charged with, what the evidence was, what evidence made it, which evidence got destroyed, this case feels like it was a little manipulated. So I could see where people have a problem with Kristen Willis kind of getting away with things. And then other people saying, and you alluded to this earlier, but you know, these guys had really bad backgrounds. And I mean, they had bad lives. And you say a bad deck. Well, yeah, it's really evident. Michael James Perry, his birth mother talked about how she did drugs and drank alcohol throughout most of her pregnancy. Almost as though, you know, she just didn't care. She was just living her life and wasn't thinking about the child. And that's just the start.
When Perry and Jason met, Perry was living in a trunk of a car. And Jason Burkett didn't want anything to do with him, but he was living in like a trailer and just said, I can't let this guy live in a trunk. Come with me. And he took him in. You know, this is where Jason first finds Perry's in the trunk of a car. That's a rough life.
Now, I'm not saying that we should forgive these guys because they have bad lives, but, you know, I can see where people wouldn't want the death penalty handed out in this case, but really, this is what happened. This is Texas. And if you commit murder in Texas, they're not afraid to give you the death penalty.
Jason, we've already mentioned that his father was in and out of prison his entire life. Jason didn't have much of a family structure. He didn't have a father figure in any sort of capacity. It's one of those things where I feel no sympathy for what they've done and for them. And as much as I'm not really for the death penalty, I'm not going to carry a torch for either one of these guys. And somebody thought that I was a bleeding heart for anyone that's convicted of such a heinous crime. I'll tell you right now, no, I don't care for either one of these guys. If Perry didn't finish his last meal, I would for him. I wouldn't care. But what are we gaining by putting this person down?
Well, we know about the debate here. Some people don't feel it's right to support someone in prison for forever, essentially, you know, for decades after they've committed murder like this, especially murder over vehicles. This is how some people feel justice will be attained. Other people say, no, it's not right. You know, two wrongs don't make a right, that kind of thing. And in this case, I don't have any sway in this case. I can't say, yes, he dies, yes, he lives. That's not up to me. All I can say is, yeah, I think I would have preferred to have this guy live out his days in prison. I would be good with that. Really, the appeals don't go well, mostly because in Jason Burkett's case, he files a writ of habeas corpus. He has all these things that he alleges, like a pathologist who's testified about Sandra Stotler's time of death shouldn't have been able to testify. He also claims his trial attorney was ineffective, which is that's really common. There was also an application for a writ of habeas corpus in 2007 where he claimed he was innocent and had collected these sworn affidavits from four different people. And it turns out that they were all fabricated. So the Court of Criminal Appeals in 2007, after they discovered these fabricated documents, put a ban on him from filing any more applications for a writ of habeas corpus ever again. Of course, you know, they leave it a little opening for him if he can make a compelling enough argument that the facts he would present in the application were not available either during trial or during any other appeal he filed. And of course, no such compelling argument is or has been made since.
Well, when you abuse the system, lie, and I totally understand. Now, that's on him. You know, if you wanted to take that risk and see if you could do a Hail Mary and get an appeal, good on you, but they shut him down.
The Montgomery County Assistant District Attorney, his name is Bill Delmore, he had kind of a funny response to this. He said Burkett ought to be writing his attorney, thanking him for keeping him off death row. The crime was just deplorable. In other words, just count your lucky stars because you could have been put on death row as well.
Now, Perry's appeals run out and he will be put to death.
Michael James Perry was put to death on July 1st, 2010. And before he died, he looked over at his mom who was crying in the observation room. What did he say, Justin?
He forgave everyone in the room. He forgave the executioners. He forgave the people in the witness box. And that actually was sort of insulting to the surviving victims' family members. Because they're like, why are you forgiving us? You don't have any say here to forgive us. We're the ones that are supposed to forgive you. But it's his delusional narcissism that he is innocent being put to death.
He looked over at his mom who was crying in the observation room. And he said, Mom, I love you. I'm coming home, Dad. I'm coming home. And a single tear, of course, was shed by him. But again, this was a case where people had trouble with Michael James Perry being put to death. I know there were even media reporters, journalists, news anchors who had trouble with this death penalty. You know, I don't know if it's just the politics coming out. I don't know if it's just that after so many executions that people are looking at Texas and thinking, is this necessary? Have we lost any innocent people? But for whatever reason, they really kind of put themselves into this case. And as we said, there's nothing really here that makes us think that Michael James Perry was onto anything. He had a website. He had all these reasons for why he didn't do it. But it all just rings hollow. And I think it may have just been a political reason why so many people spoke up and seemed to have trouble with his being put to death, which I'm not saying you can't have opinions here. I think if you've given this a lot of thought, whether you're for or against the death penalty, I think, you know, people make their own cases. But for the reporters, for the news anchors to get into this, it just seems like this is an odd case to bring it up.
I think the fact that he was so young and had a baby face, even Adam's sister was there to see this guy be executed. She'd built him up as this monster. And then she, in her own words, says, then they bring this kid into the room and strap him down to the gurney. It's not an easy thing. It's not an easy pill to take in when you see somebody so young. And one of the guys that assisted with the executions in Texas, he was there for Perry. And he said that it got so frequent. I think he even said it was like almost two a week he was assisting with. And it was when he had to assist with the execution of a female, of a woman, that it broke him. And he quit and went on to do something else because he just couldn't keep executing people. It just was not sitting right with him. And he couldn't talk to anybody about it because the opinions are these people are monsters and they deserve what they get. And he's the last person to walk them into a room and strap them down. Even his sense of humanity kicked in and said, this is wrong.
Well, Michael James Perry and Jason Burkett were both 19 when these murders were committed. And we already talked about their rough backgrounds, but you know, even around the time that they had been arrested, the time just prior to their arrests, they had a lot of trouble going on in their lives. It just seems to me like, you know, we talked about it before, but these are almost bad eggs. And the only thing I could say that someone might be able to defend them with is, you know, 19 is awfully close to that age where there's a question of, are you mature enough? Do you understand? Is your brain developed enough to really be sentenced to death or to life imprisonment for crimes like this? And I think them being 19, I would say most people would probably argue that 19's old enough, right?
Well, that's the problem. And I always compare, you know, what is an adult? If 18 is an adult, then why aren't you allowed to drink alcohol? You're allowed to sign up for the military, go off to a foreign land and possibly get shot. You're allowed to be tried as an adult, but you're not an adult yet where you're going to be given the responsibility of drinking alcohol. And instead of lowering the drinking age, I think maybe raising the adult age might be the appropriate direction to go in, because I look at my niece, she's 19 years old. She's very mature for a 19-year-old, yet I don't think she knows anything about how to understand the ramifications of her actions yet.
Well, there's a good question there about when you start to really get life and your place in it, responsibilities, other people's lives, their feelings. There's so much more to living than what you know, a younger person would know, and everyone's experience is different. I know we've met people who are 18 or 19 that seem like they're doing very well in that regard, and other people, especially people like these two, obviously they probably didn't have a chance to understand life like they probably should have,
and they might not have ever got it, you know?
Right. I think that could be argued too. I know that with the recent Supreme Court decision that said you can't just sentence an underage person to life in prison, and there is the question of brain development and when that actually really starts to take hold, whether it's 19, 20, 21, it does feel a little weird to put someone to death at 19, at least with the new science. This is Texas. And in Texas, you get a death penalty, you're probably going to be put to death. At the time of Jeremy Richardson's death, he was survived by his mother, a brother, and sister, but there was no mention of a father in his obituary. He was 18.
Jeremy and Adam were friends and they skateboarded together. Adam was 17 at the time of his murder. He was adopted by his step-grandmother, Sandra, and she raised him as her own son. He was survived by his sister, stepbrother, and stepsister, and there was no mention of his father either.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.